Hey team, it's Francis. Time for a whip around the money world. The lovely Jim Mora from RNZ Sunday Mornings asked me to come on the show to talk about everything from why it's so darn hard to find a good job right now, how we can fix that if we're job hunting, to also what's going on with mortgage rates, whether or not it's a good idea to invest in AI, and even whether it's a good budget hack to nick the soap from your hotel. Wide, varied, and as always, a delight to chat with Jim. His team have kindly said I can post that conversation here too, so here you go, enjoy our latest take on the top money news.
Frances Cook is an independent financial commentator, the former Business Desk Investments editor. She hosts the Making Sense podcast and is the author of the best-selling book, Your Money, Your Future. Kia ora, Frances. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Jobs, first of all, the data have gone soft again. Employment confidence, I saw this past week, down to its lowest level ever in June. 60% of people saying it's hard to find work compared with 46% previously. You've seen this on platforms like Reddit as well.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think we see it in the stats. We also see it in how people are feeling. We see it in the chatter. It's both anecdote and data. I mean, I hate coming in being the bad news fairy, but I mean, let's get the grim stuff out of the way before we get into some solutions, because it's a really rough job market out there. And unfortunately, if you're in some of those main centres, you know, places like Auckland and Wellington, it's actually even worse than the official stats. Those bigger cities are running above the official unemployment rate, which is, of course, really tough because those are expensive places to live. And if you're young, it's also really brutal. The youth unemployment is quite high. There is actually the good thing about times like this. There's a lot of free qualifications you can also find. People are still looking for those higher qualifications, be it health and safety certifications, be it experience in AI, be it whatever else. You know, they are looking for something else. So have a little think about what you could do to just tack a little extra qualification, a little extra experience on top. And you can find some amazing things for free out there. Sites like HubSpot or Coursera have great extra certifications you can get for free. So that is something to consider, to just try and give yourself that little edge in a tough market. I think something to know is if you are currently employed, but you're a little worried about your future or how the business is going, and maybe they might be looking at letting people go, something that is an unfortunate reality is the people who get protected at tough times are not necessarily the most talented people. They're the ones where their value is most visible. So you really want to be proactively getting in touch with your boss, letting them know what you've been up to, letting them know what wins you've been doing for them. And then if you have been using any downtime to upskill yourself, try new projects that you think could help the team, talk to your boss about that too. Say, hey, I know everyone has been talking about this new area of the company. We haven't really tried that out recently. Here's a way that I think, you know, I often have a couple of hours in the afternoon where I could be trying that out and seeing if that could help our company get ahead. Would you like me to? And I think things like that can be really valuable at a time like this. Stay visible, stay obviously valuable.
Look, at the same time as all this is going on, Francis, local businesses in specialized niches are still struggling to find suitable applicants. So what's happening here?
I know, it's a really strange, I mean, the money world in general is so split right now, and it's certainly showing up in the job market because you've got some areas running hot and they just absolutely cannot find people. Seek put out some really interesting stats on what they're seeing in the job world. And actually, job ads are up 13% year on year overall across the country. So it's not that we've got a dead job market. It's that it's a really picky one. So I think it's really worthwhile looking at where the growth actually is and being ready to think a little sideways of, you know, maybe I've always done this, but actually I think my skills could work for that. You know, some of the areas that they're seeing really in demand jobs is it's a really wide mix. Automation engineers, salespeople, truck drivers, HVAC technicians, engineering. There's a lot of the physical jobs, so trades, construction, logistics. Someone who has to be there, you need a warm body to do the job. So can be done for quite a good pay rate and can't be done by a machine. What we're really not seeing is anything in hospitality or retail or marketing and customer service. So those are very much not happening. But I think what we're seeing is a job market that isn't necessarily broken. It's just really moved. And so for anyone who is job hunting right now, it's worth looking at where those job listings have moved to. A lot of employers actually want someone who can hit the ground running.
Yeah.
However, if you are someone who has a really good track history of working hard, applying yourself, not needing much management, just getting on with it and getting the job done, really emphasize that, because that sort of thing is gold. That is the sort of thing that businesses really do value. But as well, if you're noticing that people are asking for a certain skill a lot and you know you don't have it, rather than going into a job market where there are many applicants, hundreds of people sometimes going for the same job, the problem is if you're going up against the perfect candidate, then of course they're going to take someone who can just start straight away rather than training. Mm. So if you're noticing a gap coming up a lot, just look around, see where you can find. There are so many various free ways to upskill on these skills. You know, even if it's something like AI, I know people have mixed feelings on AI, but at the end of the day, you got to get paid. You got to keep a roof over your head. Getting upskilled on these areas that employers want can be really important. You know, if we go back to even just looking at that Seek data that I pulled out before, AI mentions and job ads are up 143% in the last year. Now, that is pretty big. They're up 500% over what they were in 2019, which sounds huge, right? Here's the thing with big percentages. It's really easy to have a big percentage jump when you started from a small number, right? We've all had people try and pull this over us when we're working in media where, you know, you have one of something and then one more, 100% jump. You have to be careful with percentages. When we look at what's actually in the job data right now, AI is mentioned in just 2.9% of job ads. It is ramping up. It is going to get bigger. It's not everywhere yet. So I think there's two smart plays. If you really hate AI and you really think, I don't want to be anywhere near it, time to start targeting those industries that need warm bodies, need people, where you're less likely to be replaced by algorithms and AI and all that sort of stuff. Meanwhile, if you're someone who's always worked a desk job, you're going to be asked to work with AI, and it's going to be easier to start to get some of those AI skills on board now while it's new, while people don't expect you to be that great at it, while everyone's still figuring it out. There's a grace period at the beginning when you're learning. And I think just sort of being pragmatic and embracing that grace period and figuring out what's a smart use, what makes my life easier, what doesn't. I just think it's a smart use of time.
Frances Cook is with us from the Making Sense podcast. You've got research on what we're buying online.
Yes, and this is some really interesting research that was put out by the Global FinTech Revolut. And they found, this is specifically New Zealanders, 61% of us bought something off social media in the last month, and then 44% of us had regret over that. Nearly a third of us spending quite a bit, between $25 to $500 a month in that way. And Gen Z saying social media ads blowing their budget entirely. And it's quite easy to look at that and say, ah, young people, so silly. There are these things called dark patterns, which are totally legal, but manipulative tactics built into modern online shopping. So if you've ever seen a countdown timer on a checkout page, or if you've tried to cancel something and it's buried under six click-through screens of, are you sure? And do you really want to give up on the best thing that's ever happened to you? You know, really manipulative tactics, pre-ticked boxes that add extras to your cart. These are dark patterns, and the equivalent if you went into a shop just to have a little browse around and then tried to leave, and you discovered that as you're looking around, they put all of this stuff between you and the door. It's kind of the equivalent of that.
Stood in your way. You can't leave yet. Yeah, I understand. But most of us are used to navigating that kind of those annoying impediments. Does it get any darker?
So Revolut said clothing and fashion, electronics and skincare were the top overspending categories that they found, which I think is interesting, right? Because that shows us something else too. They feel good in the moment. They photograph well. They feed the emotional parts of us that are quite vulnerable to these impulse purchases. We want a little hit of something that feels good. So I think the best way to fight back on this is, first of all, you know, if you're feeling tired in the evening, be aware you're going to be more susceptible to this stuff and maybe stay off the social media scroll, try and do something else instead. But even things like unsaving your credit card information from your phone or getting really clear on what actually does give you that happiness hit instead. Be aware that these things are out there to try and trick you with your dopamine rewards. Fight back with a dopamine reward that actually makes you feel better.
What do you think about this idea, platforms that replicate, I was reading this in Vice magazine, that replicate the full online shopping experience. So you've got products, reviews, ratings, filters, promotions, and you've got a cart, you can put things in, you enter a delivery address, you click on the order button, a simulated courier accepts the order and says he or she's heading to your house. You can track the delivery in real time on a map. Nothing arrives and no money changes hands, Francis. I thought this was amazing.
I'm kind of flummoxed by it. I mean, what an incredible idea. Hat off to whoever came up with this idea. What an idea for our times. I do find it very dystopian, I must say.
But would it deliver the dopamine hit that you're talking about? You know what I mean?
I mean, probably. And if someone's really struggling with it, then yes, that would probably work. I feel like it would probably in the long run, though, reinforce the habit of online shopping for things you don't even want and probably encourage you to do it more in a certain way. It's almost one of those things where it's you know, when people trying to get off some sort of drug and they get the cheap version or the doctor version instead, but it doesn't necessarily address the underlying cause. I wonder if it's a bit like that.
Yes, it could be. I thought it was interesting, though. We hear that shares are doing well if people have bet on AI, which we understand. In fact, the Financial Times asks if, in fact, we may be at the start of a new investment super cycle rather than what we hear about the bubble being about to burst. What do you think?
Yeah, I am watching the share market right now. It's a fascinating time. I mean, even if we just look at the three big AI listings, one of them is on the share market already, SpaceX, but OpenAI and Anthropic are all expected to list this year as well. And if that all goes ahead, $4 trillion hitting the share market. And let's put that in context for a moment, because we're quite used to being like, oh, there's a lot of money on the share market, right? No, this is huge. It's more than the entire dot-com listings wave that went through the share market through 95 to 2000. And in fact, just those three companies listing would be roughly half the value of every US listing combined since the Second World War. So I'm looking at IPOs there when companies list for the first time, which is it's just a stunning amount of money. It's a stunning amount of value, really. But, you know, I mentioned the dot-com listings for a reason, because that rush to the share market came right before the dot-com crash. Now, do I think we're about to have a share market crash? Not necessarily. Do we all live our lives very online now? Do we all use computers and smartphones every single day? Does every single business now need a website? Yes, absolutely. So the dot-com gold rush was not wrong. It was on the brink of something big and huge and changing for how our society operates. It's just that there was a whole bunch of companies there that listed that people also got so excited about because, oh, they're part of the dot-com rush. That's the future. Quick, shove some money into them. And they had no plan, no profits, nothing. And then the whole thing fell apart eventually because you can only keep that up for so long. and a whole bunch of people lost their money.
Yes, but it's been said that the present situation is different from the dot-com crash because the companies are established. They're not just startups with hopeful dreams and visions. So you're basically saying we just have to beware of the startups with hopeful dreams and visions.
Well, somewhat, but even ChatGPT had its financials released, somewhat leaked a couple of weeks ago. Didn't look great. So I do think, you know, these companies are established. They've got good customers. They could do really well, but they're also, a lot of them, you know, stick with ChatGPT as an example. They are currently bringing in customers very, very cheaply for far less than what this technology costs, and basically trying to get people invested and hooked on the technology. And then the aim is to increase prices, which can work. Or sometimes the company keels over before they manage to make that, you know, price increase come true. So it's an interesting time. And it's always hard to tell, except for in hindsight, whether something was a bubble.
That's right. It's always hard to tell until afterwards. Understood.
And then afterwards, we're all geniuses who totally knew the whole time.
Yeah, we saw it was coming. you traditionally give us tips on how to save money in hard times. I just thought I'd end our chat with this. The Washington Post asked its subscribers for genuine extreme saving hacks. And some of them are bizarre. What do you think of these? For instance, my parents always taught me to wash used tin foil for reuse. And an older friend of mine tries to avoid using the blinker in his car at stoplights because it'll extend the life of the blinker bulb. Yes, no people. How about my husband and I take pictures of cards we would have bought and then show or send them to each other on important occasions? We haven't bought a greeting card in years. That's terrible. I think it's terrible. A terrible thing to do.
I think that's really cute. That is, do you know what? That is a sign that there is someone for everyone. How cute. They're being absolute weirdos together. But if that makes them feel good, I love it for them.
Well, the question, and it's a quote from this report. Being a penny pincher puts you in a powerful position. By dogmatically monitoring your spending, you create a mindset of constant creative awareness, which is exactly what it takes to fund a retirement or build an emergency fund.
I think, yes, cutting back and saving can be really useful. But when they say that that's what it takes to fund a retirement account or build an emergency fund, disagree, because I think you can cut back to a certain level, but I mean, look at the cost of living. Yes, being aware of your spending is really good. It's a really good tactic. After that, you've got to be looking at ways to grow your money, grow your wealth, ask for that pay rise. You know, saving $20 a week, brilliant. If you can get a $200 a month pay rise, so much better. Yes. And then you funnel that into investments and things. But I've got to say, you know, things like the taking free stuff from hotels. Come on, we all like free stuff, don't we? I always nick the tea.
Frances Cook, always lovely to talk. Thank you very much for being with us.
Lovely to chat.
This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most situations. It's not individual financial advice. If you're after that, a financial advisor is always the best bet.